Meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed real property, proposed development on Johnson Avenue, anticipated litigation, one case, student personnel consideration of California High School exit exam CASI waivers for students with disabilities, and we conferred with our labor negotiators. It's informational only and no instructions were given. We're now in open session. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes. Madam President.
Dr. Matakovich.
Yes, Madam President. Madam President. Excuse me. Madam President, I would like to pull item number 9, the approval of public education government fund agreement, as I have received some new information from the City of San Luis and would like to bring this back at a later date.
Okay. We'll pull item 9. Everything else okay?
I think so.
No other changes? Approval of the minutes.
Which one?
We have two sets.
I'll move approval of both sets.
You have to do one at a time.
We have to do both. Okay. John, you want first or second?
I'll second March 12th.
Okay. Thanks.
So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman on March 12th with a second by Mr. Spadafore. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Do you want to flip-flop on it?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll move for approval of the minutes of March 17th.
And if you would be so kind, I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Spadafore with a second by Mr. Buckman on the minutes of March 17th. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes. Oh, with one abstention by Mr. Millar. That passes. We have a presentation this evening. The Phi Delta Kappa Volunteers of the Year. We have two people being honored tonight. Mr. Robinette.
Yes, thank you. Phi Delta Kappa is a national professional educational and advocacy research organization, and for a long time now, they have been honoring what they call the Lay Citizen of the Year, and our district has participated for many years. We're allowed to select one individual, one volunteer out of the myriad volunteers in the school district to honor, and this year we just couldn't do it. We got special permission to honor two different individuals this year, and they both will be honored at a PDK luncheon that will be held later this month. But to introduce these two exceptional individuals who have done so much for our school, I'd like the principals to come forward, and first we'll hear from Ms. Gould from Del Mar Elementary.
Good evening, Janet Gould for Del Mar Elementary, and it's an honor to be here tonight speaking on behalf of the entire Del Mar staff, many who are with me this evening, as we are here to...
Wow.
Just show our tremendous support and appreciation for Bill McCowett, who has faithfully been volunteering at Del Mar for the past 7 years. 4 days a week, rain or shine, Bill comes in the afternoon and volunteers in our math lab, where he comes in, grabs a volunteer badge, and heads straight back to the computer lab to prepare the computers for our students. They all know and respect him as he knows and respects each one of them. And over these past 7 years, he's helped make a positive difference in the life of over 250 students. He's helped them acquire skills and confidence while modeling dedication and patience. Last year, Bill's wife, Wanda, who is also who's an instructional aide at our school, mentioned to him that our morning fluency lab intervention was quite full. So guess who it was who said, hey, you know, if you train me in fluency lab, I can come in the morning and I can help out too. And so that's what he does. Several mornings he'll also come in and help out in our morning intervention. He definitely does more for the Del Mar community than we'll ever, any one of us will ever know. It's not just the students he helps, but it's also his regular volunteering for whatever needs done around our school. For example, he truly helps make Del Mar a California distinguished school. He's an important member of our Del Mar family, and I ask you to join myself and the Del Mar staff as we recognize Bill McCowett as Phi Delta Kappa Lay Citizen of the Year.
And to introduce our second recipient, Mary Lou Gooden from Los Ranchos Elementary.
We also have many staff members here to honor Beth this evening also, so we really appreciate that. Albert Schweitzer said, "I don't know what your destiny will be, but one thing I do know, the only ones among you who will be truly happy are those who have sought and found how to serve." Beth Peterson, our nominee for the Phi Delta Kappa Volunteer of the Year, deserves abundant happiness for her many years of service to so many students. From 1959 to 1983, Beth taught second grade in San Luis Coastal at Emerson, Teach, and Sunnyside. In 1983, she retired and became a substitute, and then her volunteering started in earnest. She has volunteered for 1 to 2 mornings a week since 1983, without fail, in our second and third grade classrooms. She tutors individual students. She works in our, I just found this out today, she works in our Read Naturally lab also. She's found a need. She monitors small groups. She reads to classes. She works in the library. She sets up centers and runs papers for teachers. She's a wonderful teacher clerical aide, which we don't have that position anymore, but Beth does that for our teachers. She can shuck and grind acorns with the students. She's helped at every Thanksgiving feast that Julie Clopping put on for more than 20 years. And she's also available whenever we need her. She'll come in and fill in for us. It is very fitting that we are honoring her on her 50th anniversary with the district.
Oh,
Beth
wow.
genuinely embodies Marion Wright Edelman's words, "Service is what life is all about."
At this time, we traditionally, and if it's the board's desire, have a short reception for our two recipients, and just know that these two will be honored also at a luncheon on April 25th that several of us will be attending. Thank you.
Okay. Why don't we take, how about 10 minutes, and we'll honor our PDK volunteers, and then we'll be back in session. Okay. The meeting is back in session. If people would take their places, please. Okay. And moving on, the next order of business is correspondence. The board has received a letter addressed to Dr. Valentine. We were copy recipients. From Dr. Kathleen McNamara, Superintendent of Paso Robles Public Schools, thanking the San Luis Obispo High School staff, Dr. Matakovich, and Dr. Valentine for their assistance regarding the trimester schedule recently adopted for Paso Robles High School. I also have correspondence that I've not even had an opportunity to read, and it was just at my place here, from David Jansen. It appears that he is taking exception to the instructional calendar that was recently adopted in behalf of working parents. Okay. Okay, the next item of business is public comment. We have a number of people who wish to address the board tonight, so we will be strictly adhering to the three-minute speaking period. I think everyone should please be aware that the Brown Act does not allow board members to respond to public comment because we can only respond to things that are agendized in advance. So while we are listening and we are hearing you
in the bargaining process. So tonight we'd like to present our perspective, a perspective that is informed by our direct contact with students and a perspective that is also concerned with their well-being and the working conditions that will allow the district to continue to recruit and retain the best teachers in the county and the best teachers in the state. We are grateful for this opportunity and respectfully ask your attention. So much depends on a board who is attentive to the teachers. A school board that accepts the fact that teachers make things work and that appreciates our goodwill and our hard work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tony Evans followed by Pam. Oh, I'm sorry. Tony Evans followed by Pam Alford.
Tony Evans, kindergarten first grade teacher and 15-year reading recovery teacher for the district. I'm here tonight to talk about the principles of fair trade. I have my fair trade coffee here, and it talks about that fair trade supports a better life, that it promotes community, and stewardship is what it says on the back of the can here. And I'm going to suggest that I'm very optimistic tonight that this year the employment of reading recovery teachers in San Luis Coastal Unified School District can, in fact, be certified fair trade. When our district was facing tough budget times 8 years ago, an effort was made to make reading recovery more cost-effective. An agreement was mistakenly entered into with the district that created an egregious exploitation of reading recovery teachers. Both the district and the association bear responsibility for not rectifying this sooner. A reading recovery teacher, working with four students a day, works the equivalent of a 50% position, but is paid as a 30% teacher. You ask, how does that happen? Well, you just take the primary instructional day of 290 minutes, divide that in half, 145 minutes, ask a teacher to teach four reading recovery students at 30 minutes apiece, 120 minutes, assuming that every lesson ends in exactly 30 minutes, and the children are beamed out by Star Trek technology, and new students are beamed in, allowing absolutely a flawless millisecond transition period. But in reality, it doesn't work quite like that. So the actual seat time to deliver four reading recovery lessons always looks like about 100, 145 minutes. Now, these teachers are only paid for instructional time. They receive no preparation compensation, unlike classroom teachers and other specialists who have built into their duty days preparation time. A reading recovery teacher to start new students requires 3 or 4 hours of paperwork. Every time one slot opens up and a new student is put in or a student exits, paperwork is required. None of that paperwork, hours worth, is compensated for. It is interesting that in a program where detailed lesson analysis is done to prepare you to teach the next lesson, that we should think that preparation is an afterthought, if you like. And finally, that the reason this disparity exists, you know, you go back to, as I say, misunderstandings that happened many years ago. And again, I don't believe that any teacher should be exploited. I don't believe that this district wants to be in that situation. And I know, and I'm thankful that the association has stepped forward to say that they're willing to support that too. So, fair trade, certified for San Luis Coastal Reading Recovery Teachers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Bonnet.
Pam Alford, followed by Kathy Bonnet.
Good evening. I'm here just wanting to share some thoughts that we teachers feel about combination classes and the extra stress and, I guess, complications that that creates for teachers. When you have a combination class in elementary school, you're responsible for two grade-level content curricula. And some splits have really extremely difficult content, which is very different at each grade level. So especially in science, social studies, and mathematics, so it makes it very difficult to even blend to try to teach as a make subplans for that extra time out of class also. So that can be a really an extra burden. During any kind of standardized testing or district assessments, They're different for every grade level, and they have to be given at different times. They have different time commitments, different time restraints. There's also complications in grade-level field trips. Sometimes you don't think about that, but if you're teaching, let's say, a 2-3 split, the second graders will be having a field trip that those third graders already went on the year before. The ones that they're going on, if you were to take it as your whole class, then they're going to go on third grade field trips as a second grader. Then the following year, they would go on that same field trip again as a third grader. So you have the option of trying to come up with new field trips or doing it that way, or leaving half of your class back with a substitute teacher, once again having to come up with subplans. There's also parent concerns in any split. If you're the older of the grade level in a combination, teachers often have to, it's a constant pressure to prove to the parents that you are challenging their students and that it was not a remediation placement for their child. And if you're the younger, then you want to make sure that their kids are not going to be repeating the same material the next year. So very quickly, we just would like you in negotiations to encourage the team to be thinking of stipends for the extra time and possibly even for materials that might make blending different curricula. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Alford.
Kathy Bonnet, which followed by Kathy Benedict and Karen Sharp, who apparently will be speaking at the same time.
Hi, my name's Kathy Bonnet. I'm the resource specialist at Baywood Elementary School, and I'm scared stiff. I have to tell you that this is very, very awkward time to be coming before you, and I want you to know I'm really thankful for my job, and I'm thankful for working in this school district. I'm passionate about what I do. The most important thing for me is to meet the needs of the kids at my school. I'm here to talk about SSTs. Although I'm a resource specialist, SSTs are a general education function. They are, I'll give you a definition. The SST is a collaborative problem-solving team that includes both general and special education staff. There's two items on the negotiation that has to do with SSTs. One is that SSTs would be held during the school day or during the duty day. That sounds great. But in reality, at some schools, it's just not feasible. At Baywood Elementary School, we have two SDC classes. We have the resource class, and then we have lots of kids in speech and language. Last year, or this year, we had 27 SDC IEPs, 32 RSP IEPs. That includes initial IEPs for students that were referred to special education, 41 SSTs. That's 117 meetings a year. Doug Jennison should get a Medal of Honor. I want to say that right now because he's at every single one of those. It's not possible to have those during the duty day. There's just not enough duty days to do it. Even if you have it two days a week, it bleeds over after 3:30. what I would like to suggest, and I want you to consider it, because this has to do with working conditions, and it also has to do with my ability and the general education representative's ability to plan for our instruction, is to have one day a month where SSTs can be held all day and we get substitutes for our classes. I can't miss working with my kids because I have mandated minutes that I'm supposed to be working with them. Obviously, the general education teachers can't miss working with their kids because somebody needs to be working with them, or otherwise they'll go crazy. That's one thing that I would like to suggest, and I hope you pay attention to this. I hope that it's something that you think about. Some schools have SSTs before school starts. They start the SST at 7:30 and they work until 8:30. And for some school staffs, that works, but for other school staffs, they have childcare issues and it's just not feasible. One thing to consider would be if an SST has to be held outside the duty day, is to reimburse the teacher for it. I was going to end with a quote by Dr. Valentine that he said at the beginning of the school year, and I really like it. It says, creative schools need rich conversations about whether students have learned and how well. Creative schools don't entrust the quality of a child's education to the random luck of a classroom assignment, but take responsibility for it in every heart and every
licenses in speech pathology issued by the medical examining board in the state of California and national certification with ASHA. We assess eligibility for special education, diagnose students, develop treatment plans and IEPs, manage caseloads, and provide daily therapeutic services to the students that we serve. We serve mildly to severely disabled students, preschool through high school, that are diagnosed with articulation difficulties, language comprehension and expression disorders, oral motor weaknesses, stuttering, traumatic brain injuries, autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, agenesis of the corpus callosum, and so on. Our caseloads are similar to private and hospital-based speech-language pathologists. We also support general education teachers and students in literacy and second language development. And in order to provide legally defensible services, it's necessary for us to maintain our state licensure and our national certification. This costs us personally up to $500 apiece from our own salaries. Because we are licensed, we are able to bill for Medi-Cal services for our therapeutic and assessment services. Our department in speech pathology generates for the district Medi-Cal money from our billable services, allowing the district to fund a full-time nurse, among other things. District-wide, we serve over 50% of the students in special education, which is approximately 465 out of 800 special education students. Our caseloads are above the state recommendation, many of us having caseloads of 60. State recommendations are approximately 50 and below. We have, between us, 10 of us, 240 years of experience combined. And this is the scary part about the speech pathologists in our district, is that our average age is 55, and we're not going to be around for that much longer.
Can I speak since I'm another? I have a short thing to say. I'm Kathy Benedict. I'm a speech pathologist at Baywood Elementary and Morro Bay High School. So now you know who we are and what we do. Now you know our average age. That's scary. What you might not know now is that there is a national shortage of speech-language pathologists. There is currently a county-wide shortage of speech-language pathologists, and many of those speech pathologists are not holding state licensure. We do. Neighboring school districts have had to resort to hiring speech pathologists from private agencies, costing these districts extra money and reducing services to students, staff, and administration. SLPs hired this way must follow agency regulations, not school district policies, and that affects loyalty. We currently have an open position, which we've been unable to fill. Next year, we'll have two SLP vacancies. Qualified local speech pathologists have expressed interest in these positions, but unfortunately, due to salary restrictions, they cannot and will not apply. They cannot afford to take $20,000 in pay cuts. SLPs from out of our area can't afford to move here due to our high cost of housing. We're in a quandary, and we do not want to see our students suffer. We don't want to see an increase in educational litigation due to an inability to meet our students' needs. We urge you, our school board, to encourage communication, support, and positive negotiation between the administration and CTA. The 19 issues that are being negotiated are important to all CTA members. Thank you for listening. It's the first step in effective communication.
Thank you, Mrs. Benedict.
Benetta Negronti, followed by Susan Delaney.
I think it's Mark Twain who said that there's little lies, there's big lies, and then there's statistics. And because of that, I'm a very, very cynical soul. I don't ever trust any statistics. I always check it out for myself. And having heard some things about the board and all, I did. I went online and I checked everything out. There are some things I really do appreciate. One is I appreciate your fiscal responsibility. I don't mind that you have squirreled some funds in places where, frankly, they don't belong. And I don't really mind that you've got a 5% rather than a 3%, because I don't mind people having a little more money in reserve. I think that's fiscally very, very good. Where I don't go, though, is people, you've got too much money.
Looks like Mo McGee.
Good evening. I'm Susan Bellaney. I've been with the district 23 years. I'm recently an EL specialist with Hawthorne and Sinsheimer. And I'm here to remind everybody about an unfortunate event that took place in 2002. And I don't know if you all remember it, but I certainly do. And it was when almost all of our primary prep was taken from us. We've been waiting 7 years to have it officially reinstated. Don't you think it's overdue? Also, specialists are teachers too, and we need preparation time language in the contract as well. And I just felt a need to personally ask all of you to support your teachers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mo McGee, followed by Patty Ann Green.
Hi, I'm Maureen McGee, Nurse Mo. This is Margaret Kiro and Judith Geyer. We also have Gail Gladley. She's not with us tonight. We're the four San Luis Coastal school nurses, and we're CTA members. And I'm just going to talk about how school nurses help children learn. We assess student health status and make referrals. We help families access care and resources. We identify vision and hearing problems that impact learning. We deliver emergency care, sometimes, oftentimes it's to staff. We administer medication. We draft health care plans and perform health care procedures. We're involved with disaster preparedness. We provide health counseling, and we help students manage complex and chronic illnesses like life-threatening food allergies, diabetes, asthma, seizure disorder, emotional problems, G-tube feedings, tracheostomies. We provide health professional input on wellness programs for the school community. School nursing further involves planning, developing, managing, and evaluating healthcare services to children in the educational setting, and encompasses working with families of these students as well as the community. The National Association of School Nurses recommends one school nurse per 750 well students. Currently, at San Luis Coastal, the school nurse to student ratio is one school nurse per almost 2,000 students. All students, we feel, and I think everyone else here feels, that all students have a right to have their health needs safely met while in the school setting. The school nurse to student ratios exist to ensure that each student is afforded appropriate preventative, health promotion, early identification, and intervention services. Thank you. I have a ratio ruler that you can look at and see how all the states compare with their ratios. California's 40th.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Patty Andreen, and I had the privilege of sitting with a lot of you 7-8 years ago when we faced much tougher times than you do now. But even in good times, I see that you have tough decisions to make. And I'm very humbled in seeing the teachers here that did such a fantastic job for my child who graduated from here 3 years ago. With a wonderful education. We've been so happy that she went through the schools of San Luis Coastal, and it was a privilege to be a part of this district. I know that all of you know more about the specific issues in the negotiations than I do, but I do want to say that I have admired the work of the district in putting itself in the kind of position that it can sit here today without having to face major layoffs, and with the luxury of trying to address some of these specific issues and giving a salary increase to all the employees and not losing permanent employees. And I think some of the tough decisions that you've made over the years have put the board in this position where it is a very solvent district that is still delivering such a top-quality education with the help of all these incredible teachers that are still here, and I'm so happy that they are here. I know you guys feel old, and we're all getting older, but please stay as long as you can and keep doing it. And thank you to the board members, to the administrators, and to every
legal requirement in our job. We often might be the first person, at least on elementary level, that the secretaries go to, an irate parent, an 8-year-old having a panic attack. Our responsibilities are outside of what we might already have planned. All of us are mandated reporters, as are our teachers, yet we might be the consultant that a teacher goes to. How do you fill out the form? What's the best way to handle it? It's not uncommon to have a parent come to us and say, who made the report? I'm blank, blank, blank about it. So that's part of our responsibility, to sue that parent, let them know that we're keeping children safe. Certainly if threats are brought to our attention, a drawing, a remark, something in writing, we need to be sensitive and skilled and trained in how to maintain safety. Bullying absolutely is something that we have to have expertise in, how to recognize it, how to take the report, how to help those who are both targets and the one who's bullying and the bystanders. And even the dangers of the internet. We need to be savvy in how to support parents and keeping their kids safe. So we just wanted to speak to that, to illuminate what we see as a responsibility. And I'm a practical person. I like to keep the emotions out of it. I said, hey, Mr. Quisenberry, if the percentage is 4, 5, and 6, how long has it been that way? And he goes, oh, about 20 years. So just a thought, if the responsibilities have increased, we appreciate your consideration of looking at increasing the percentage. And I did the math. 5% of 50,000 would be 2,500. So if it only went up 1%, it would be an extra $500. Again, we appreciate your respect. I'm proud to be an elementary counselor in this district. Thank you.
One thing that Dana didn't put on the list that I think is very important is that we're also part of the crisis intervention response team, which means if there's a death on campus of anybody, then we're the first ones called. And that is, you know, that is one of our job responsibilities that is wearing on people. And we have had people that have gone into crisis because of the crisis. So we do need to take good care of ourselves so that we'll be there for everyone else. So thank you.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address the board? Mr. Petrino.
Bruce Bedrigian, President, SLCTA. Board members, what you see here tonight are concerned elementary teachers. We asked just our elementary teachers to come tonight to this board meeting so that we could put faces with the issues. We know you care about your teachers. We know you care about your students. So this is why we're here tonight. After we're through with public comment, we're all going to leave as a united body. But we will be back. We're coming back April 28th with secondary teachers. And then on May 12th, we're going to come back with all of our teachers. And the reason that we're doing this is we're hoping that you will encourage your negotiations team to reopen negotiations. SLCTA did not close negotiations. Your team closed negotiations. We want you to encourage them to reopen negotiations. We want to talk. We don't want to walk. We need your help with this. We encourage you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Last chance. Anyone else? Seeing no one.
Okay. Moving on, we have no student representatives tonight. We have reports by school staff and administrators. No reports.
Okay. Madam Chair, I do.
Oh, yes, Dr. Okay. Valentine.
Just wanted to acknowledge that late last week, Pete Zotovich received a call from Jack O'Connell, in which Jack O'Connell made the official announcement that Morro Bay High School was being honored and recognized for a second time as a California Distinguished School. Just like to extend my congratulations to the students, to the staff, and to the leadership of Morro Bay High School on this remarkable accomplishment.
Absolutely. No other staff reports. Mr. Buckman, is there an ROP report?
Yes, Madam President. About an hour and a half discussion, took another vote and said that the JPA would probably not be releasing money to the districts for flexibility. So I also neglected to mention that a couple of meetings ago, I was made president of the ROP board. So I probably should do that, too.
Congratulations. Thank you very much. Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
Thank you, Madam President. I think that we talked last board meeting about how the Legislative Analyst's Office had revealed that there is an $8 billion shortfall in the budget that was not planned for or addressed in the recent adopted budget. So we go into our May 19th election on the six bond issues, knowing that our initial shortfall as a state is going to be $8 billion. The outcome of the election is going to have an impact on increasing the size of that deficit. It certainly won't decrease the size of that deficit, but depending on the outcome, the deficit could increase by another $11 billion at least just from the election alone. Between now and the election, there's many income, revenue-producing events occurring at the state level, not the least of which is income taxes, which I think that we're all within a week of meeting some sort of a timeline on. And the state will be very graciously accepting your checks, I'm sure. But the point being is that they made predictions several months ago about the size of those revenue collections. And to the extent that it's not included in the $8 billion, which there were some shortfalls in there, the next few months are very critical for determining whether there's going to be an additional shortfall because of declining revenues from sales taxes, income taxes, property taxes, and so forth and so on. In our own district, we've discovered that our recent and most immediate estimations for property taxes, and I stress estimations because nothing will be solid until the last 2 weeks of July, the first week in August, but the estimations show that our property taxes as a district are going to remain flat for the first time in many, many years, at least the 8 years I've been here, and I would probably guess there was several years before that, that we had been seeing small or large but steady increases in our property tax incomes. What this leads me to is that there is a growing dismay with what the future holds for education. And a great example of that is the federal money that the bailout or stimulus, I'm sorry, it's called stimulus, not bailout, stimulus money coming from the feds addressing three different issues within education, IDEA, special ed. They've got money designated for Title I, low socioeconomic students, and then they have some backfill money for essentially revenue limit districts. And while the feds have taken a very strong position in discouraging the state from using that money for anything but the purpose intended, education, the Legislative Analyst's Office has come out with a recommendation to the legislature that should the bonds fail, that they grab a hold of that or the equivalent amount of money and cut education by the amount of money that's coming from the stimulus package. What this will do, in effect, is negate any of the benefits that the federal government had proposed in passing the stimulus money. What remains to be seen is the outcome of the election, but I would point out that the polling numbers for all of the bonds except one, or all of the propositions, I should say, except one, are failing miserably in terms of their ability to probably pass. The only one that is passing is the one that holds the legislature salaries should they not be able to balance the budget. So that's at an 82% approval rating as of a couple of weeks ago. We haven't passed any of our danger points yet. We haven't bailed ourselves out. We have no real reason to feel elated about our future financial position. So we continue to watch carefully for the outcome of the proposition election, and then afterwards the results of that election are going to be contained in a June 8th presentation by the governor about what he plans to do as a result of whatever the election outcome is. And those are two significant events for us for the next couple of years that will impact what our financial and resources position is going to be.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Reports by board members. Mr. Angel.
Good evening. I recently had the I just got back from San Diego, and but I'm going to take, I'll change it up a little. But looking at the state's $8 billion shortfall, looks like our state budget is nothing more than complexity combined with incompetence. And that's, we need to make sure we write to our legislatures and tell them that the Recovery Act money is intended to supplement and not supplant our funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Unger?
I had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago to the Latino literacy graduation, and I know you spoke about that, Mrs. Roger. And just what a touching, wonderful ceremony that was at Baywood School. Three of our teachers participated heavily, and then there were a lot of teachers there that were supporting the program. There were, I would say, between 20 and 30 families that received their certificates of graduation from the program. Mr. Banfield had his ventriloquist, I call it dummy, but I don't know what else, I forget what the mannequin, and carried on a conversation in Spanish. It was a proud moment for me to see these families involved in something that helps their kids and themselves as a family sit down and learn to read together, and not necessarily even just learn to read together, but to sit as a family and read together. It was the most wonderful ceremony I've seen. Went to the Monarch Grove open house. Mr. Angel was there. We had a good time. And then I wanted to thank Dr. Valentine and Rick Mayfield and Kim Holmes particularly for the hospitality that the district showed to Paula Campbell, the president of the California School Boards Association, who was here. We had probably about 8 school board members from other school districts in San Luis Obispo County, plus some superintendents. Paula got to see what went on at Pacheco Elementary School. It's, as always, it's a great place. It's a great way to see kids learning English and Spanish. And what a wonderful opportunity we have for our kids in this district. And just a reminder that it's open house season, and so all parents, if you please pay attention to that, get out and visit your schools, say hi to your teachers, and say hi to your administrators. And C.L. Smith is tomorrow night, 6:30, be there or be square.
Thank you. Mr. Beckman.
I recently had the opportunity to attend the state conference, the annual conference for the Small School Districts Association. I was lucky enough to be invited as a presenter, but more importantly, I got to spend some time with some of the smaller school districts and to hear some of the stories that are going on with their budget issues. And I did bring back a few ideas, Russell, so I'll share those with you. I also got to visit Laguna Middle School because there was a thing that went around and I got my body fat measured and my waist is a little bigger than I thought it was, but I'll be working on that. But I did get to talk to some of the staff, and it's always a pleasure to visit Laguna. I also just want to mention that I'm finding it very difficult personally to deal with the propositions that are coming up on May 19th, and I would urge everybody to go to the League of Women Voters website or to go to the legislative analyst website to get some fairly unbiased opinions on that. They're very complicated. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Thank you. Should I be seeing a light? What I do? No. Okay. I just wanted to thank Chris for arranging for Paula Campbell to come here. It was wonderful to hear her ideas of traveling around the state and finding what everyone's dealing with, but very importantly, to hear what her thoughts were about how we can position ourselves well to make sure some of that federal stimulus money comes directly to our district. So that was really helpful. And had a fun time at the Del Mar Auction Barbecue and Cow Plop, which Janet says raised nearly $35,000, which is a huge accomplishment in this economy, and in fact more than they raised last year even. So they worked very hard to accomplish that goal. And it was great to see Ms. Angel and Dr. Matakovich teach in Bishop's Peak open house. And I just wanted to make a comment that I wrote a letter to the editor, which was published a few weeks ago, as a mom, as a parent, a proud parent of some work that my son's class was doing in their community action projects, and the notion of his teacher and giving her kudos about what she had done. And after that, I heard from other parents and from other teachers, of course, about the work that is being done, which, of course, we're all very much aware of, the various community action projects and the fundraisers and the important things that all of our children are engaging in and our schools are engaging in. And I did just want to clarify that I actually wrote that as a parent and not as a school board member, but because my name was recognized there, that title got attached to my letter. But I just wanted to clarify that. But I also wanted to encourage other parents to write letters to the Tribune, because obviously they do publish them.
And I encourage folks to go down there and tour the artwork in the lobby.
Thank you. No one else? Okay. The next item 5, is a public hearing utilizing flexibility authorized by SBX 3. Should I? Yeah, why don't we take a little technical break?
Mark's got a lot of stickers.
It's been pulled. I can't listen. AGP, are you ready? Okay. Item 5 is a public hearing utilizing flexibility authorized by SBX 3-4 related to categorical program funding. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, ma'am. We have an ability given to us by the state budget to reconstitute our restricted program funding into an unrestricted category and move it into areas that allow us maximum flexibility in its usage. The public hearing today is part of the process in making that happen, and we are here to open a public hearing when the Madam Chairman so desires to do so, that would get the public input on this issue. And then the next item up will be a vote about being able to go forward with it on a resolution.
Okay. The public hearing is open. Is there anyone who would care to speak to this issue? Seeing no one, I'll close public hearing and move to item 6, which is a resolution. Resolution number 12-08-09, utilizing flexibility authorized by SBX 3-4 related to categorical program funding.
Thank you, ma'am. Having conducted the public hearing, we now bring forth to the board an opportunity to discuss and provide input on the flexibility option that's provided by the state of California related to categorical program funding. Very briefly, the state categorized categorical money into three different tiers. Tier 3 gave a maximum flexibility to those programs, of those fundings, and by taking advantage of that, we could move substantial amounts of money from a restricted usage into an unrestricted usage. By doing this, the board is also basically taking the action that says that the program money, the money received to deliver this program, we no longer have to deliver the program. However, it isn't our intent not to deliver the program. We are focused on delivering the program. We just want to be able to, should we absolutely need to, use this money in a very flexible way.
Move approval of Resolution 12-08-09.
Mr. Buckman, did you have comment? Okay, so moved by Mr. Miller and seconded by Mr. Unger. Mr. Buckman.
While I'm probably going to vote in favor of this resolution, I just really would like to caution us all that categorical funds were put in place to protect the money from sort of going into the general fund for other things and to reach very specific groups of children and to fulfill certain needs. So I would just caution that as we move forward, and if we look at flexibility, that we really make sure that we're not taking the money away from children and programs that need it in order to fulfill other needs in the district that may not be as necessary.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Unger. It's a roll call vote.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Angel? Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
7-0.
Thank you. Moving on, action discussion, item 7, approval of the preschool plan.
Madam Chair, last board meeting we had an opportunity to do an extensive presentation on on the concept of...
And also, I mean, one of the things that I learned early on at my years at C.L. Smith with my sons is the importance of mainstreaming and the interaction between special needs children and our other children and how they both grow and benefit from that experience. And I think this is an opportunity for us to continue to build on those great things. I had a chance to talk to Amy Shields and tell her how much I appreciated the presentation. And I want to extend my congratulations to all staff involved. I also mentioned to Brad that I particularly liked the physical layout and the plans for that. And I'm excited about it.
Mr. Buckman. Chris, is your mic down?
I'm sorry.
You need to physically put it down, or I can't tell.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Now I can put it back up. I had emailed Dr. Matakovich and Dr. Valentine a couple of questions, and I would just, for my purposes, I'd like to hear those answers again. The playground, will it be accessible to the public when it's not during school?
Yeah, appreciated that question. We have made the general playgrounds available to the public, but even our kindergarten playgrounds have been off limits to the public during non-school hours, and we would follow that model with our preschool.
Mm. The second thing that I had a great interest in is assurances that there will be mainstreaming opportunities for students in the afternoon session, and you had shared with me the verbally that that there would be hope that there would be some spots available for regular education students in the afternoon, and I just would like to verify that, please.
Yeah, that is the plan, to offer and offer them at no charge, by the way, for the afternoon preschool program, to provide mainstreaming integration opportunities for the students from the special needs preschool. We'll also have some scholarships in the morning session of the parent participation class that would be available to students who socioeconomically may not be able to access that program.
And just the last thing, I realize that we're looking at the center at C.L. Smith, and geographically it's helpful. I do think that we're going to need to look at doing something on the coast. My understanding is that about half the students that will be attending C.L. Smith do live on the coast. There are some sites available there. I think Sunnyside is one. We have a state preschool at Del Mar as well. And it's at some point in the future, I'd like to explore the option of having a separate class on the coast to serve those kids so that they don't have to ride the buses and so that they can be involved with kids in their community as well. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
I think my question is along the lines of Mr. Unger's. I'm very convinced by the arguments in this agenda packet, as I was last time, about the help that these types of preschools will give in closing the achievement gaps. I'm interested to know if we've thought of a timeline for building other regional preschools, so it's very similar. But I also wonder if we need to look at the strategic plan and whether it specifically talks about preschool and whether we need to revisit it and make sure that it does. And I'm not sure whether we have access to the funds from the County First Five Committee, but they have been used to create at least one or two preschools with the County Office of Education. So I'd like to make those comments.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
Thank you. Paula Campbell talked about some of the federal stimulus money being earmarked for this, it sounded like exactly this program. And I'm wondering, what she said is that when and if that money comes all the way through to us, there would be a pretty short timetable to spend it. If we're calling this one-time money or ongoing expenses, would we be able to put it into that for that purpose?
Well, that caught our eye, too, as being a potential place to use federal stimulus dollars, which are one-time. They have a two-year lifespan, and we have a number of one-time costs that are related to the preschool. All of the regulations regarding the federal stimulus dollars have yet to come out, so we're not sure what conforms to what, and whether we get it or not, of course, is yet to be determined. The only thing I would throw in of a sort of a general nature on that is that federal stimulus dollars are very much intended to offset some of the brutal reductions that everyone is experiencing, and we're experiencing a share of those as well in spite of some of the conversation that we have. And whether we offset it in terms of preschool dollars or whether we offset costs that are related to services to English learners or whether we offset services that go to special education students, if it's IDEA money, the net result is sort of all the same, and that is that it liberates.
Is there any discussion on this item? Would someone like to make a motion? Okay. Moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Angel. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. Item 9 was previously pulled. Item 10, approval of additional new and modified secondary courses for 2009-2010.
Yes, you should have received a copy of revised pages 10.2 and 10.3. We've removed two of the courses that were originally included in this item because of the postponement of the PEG Fund Agreement Board item tonight. Okay. The remaining modified courses presented for your review propose changes to several physical education elective courses, and the purpose of these changes is to increase student access to those courses. So this item's presented for your consideration and will be brought back for your approval at the next meeting.
Okay, I do have a question. Under physical education, advanced racket sports, we have several times had difficulties because of problems at San Luis Obispo High School and the striping of the basketball courts for the racket sports. And I'm wondering if bringing this in as a modified course, are we going to be able to accommodate striping for badminton and the basketball at the same time? Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, the modification is really to allow the instructor approval for admission to the class. It isn't so much to expand the class beyond its current demand. The second thing is that we did restripe the gymnasium in response to the request that we had from the racket sports people. And at this point, we feel that the facilities are adequate to handle the demand on this course.
Terrific. Thank you. So, I will move approval of... Oh, it's coming back. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mrs. Duckeskamp, thank you. No, it's already done. You are the best clerk. Okay, item 11, board self-evaluation planning. Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, the board has selected May 3rd for an opportunity to do a self-evaluation. A number of suggestions have come forward regarding topics. Central to all of that would be a focus on the CSBA self-evaluation topics. Since then, some other topics have come forward and been shared through the update, but would need to be vetted with the whole board tonight regarding additional topics to consider. And finally, the board asked us to explore the possibility of the availability of a CSBA facilitator to come in, since that was a focus the board wanted to bring to the self-evaluation. We did find that there was a CSBA evaluator available. The costs were $3,500 a day plus expenses, and we're looking at a one-day self-evaluation retreat. With that, the board is free to talk about facilitators, dates and times, and topics.
Mr. Spadafore.
Being a participant in past self-evaluations, I believe that the most important thing for our evaluation is to set aside enough time, identify the areas that we want to discuss, and be involved in self-reflection and hard work on our own impetus with a moderator. I think spending the $3,500 for someone from CSBA is not the best way to proceed. I think it's a lot of money, and I think we need to focus more on our specific issues that we deal with at the district and how we work together and how we address the board and we address the public. And I think that'll be better served with just having a moderator that can help us work through our issues, knowing that there's a bigger structure out there that we've all had an opportunity to learn from at various meetings with CSBA, with material that's available to read in terms of structure. So I would be in support of having a moderator, maybe who we've used in the past, Wendy, but that we realize that our work is with ourselves, looking at what we've done, where we're going, and why, and how we do it.
Madam Chair, if I could just jump in. We did try to contact Wendy. I apologize for not sharing that. Wendy Wendt, who was our facilitator in the past. That date is not available for Wendy to someone. that is timing is flexible, and we could start probably at 10 o'clock in the morning.
That works for you?
What I'd like to suggest, if we're not going to have the CSBA help, and I have to agree, I think it's outrageous. The fee is outrageous for a one-day event. And we're going to go to something that's a little more similar to what we had, then I'm not sure we need an entire day to do that. So I would just throw that out. In hopes of gaining some more hours at the place that, other place that I've already had a commitment. But also because we've been able to do a self-evaluation in an evening before, and without that structure in an event, I think we can do it in less time.
Dr. Allentine?
Well, the only thing, I think if we could agree on a starting time, the board could end it at any point it felt it had exhausted the topics, if you keep the time open.
Yeah, no, I think that's the key. It's the starting time and where we're going to end and what we're going to go through. But I understand Mark's, quandary with having another commitment. So if we have to look at another day because you can have more time, I think it's starting early and going until you feel like you've accomplished what you want to accomplish, because we don't know how long it'll take.
I think there had been some discussion, but I'm not sure about the 10 to 6 or whatever. And I think, again, without the structure, I'm not sure we need to start that early. I will be up. I'll be in San Jose basically working, and I had committed to Sunday. I had agreed originally to cut that short and be here in time for the 4 o'clock self-evaluation. So I'm wondering if the board could consider a 1 o'clock start. A 2 o'clock start. Do I hear 3 o'clock? A 2 o'clock start as opposed to a 10 a.m. start, if that's agreeable.
Everybody's good. Everybody's good with 2 o'clock?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I just want to make sure that we have enough time to do the work that we need to do, because my experience with the past self-evaluations is that we haven't had enough time, and that there's been a lot of stuff we felt like we should try to talk about, and we didn't really talk about, and I think we were starting to get to the meat at the end, and then it was time to go. So I would propose starting earlier. I'd like to start as early as possible. 2 o'clock is better than 4 o'clock, as long as we're able to go as late as we possibly can go.
Okay. Well, Mark, it's, 3 hours back? Let's make it 1 o'clock. I'm just fresher in the morning, so the closer we get to nap time, the harder it becomes for me. So why don't we start at 1, and then we'll just go as long as we need to? Okay? So... And Dr. Valentine, would you pursue facilitation? Are we in agreement that we'll use a local facilitator, Don Maruska, or there are others available? Okay. Okay, if there's no further discussion, then we'll move on to action consent. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. Item 12, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 13, acceptance of donations.
I'd like to pull that, please.
Item 14, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 15, approval of purchase orders. 16, approval of warrants and payroll. 17, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. 18, approval of California High School exit exam, CASI waivers for students with disabilities. 19, I'll pull, approval of adult school classes for 2009-2010. Item 20, approval of instructional materials adoption recommendation for K-8 mathematics, pre-algebra, and algebra 1. Okay, I'll move approval of item 12, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 20. Motion by myself, second by Mr. Spadafore. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Acceptance of donations. Chris, was that you?
Yeah. I just wanted to remind everybody, if you look under corporate matching gifts, that there are corporate matching gifts that are typically available for our schools. Adobe Systems, for example, matched some funding for Los Ranchos School. Big one around here is PG&E. Lots of folks work for PG&E, and PG&E does match those donations. So I would really ask people who work for a major corporation, if you donate to the school, ask if your corporate...
You know, I have to tell you that was a class that I had misgivings about. I thought, you know, how many people out there actually want to learn this? That class has been huge, and it keeps coming back and coming back. So, you know, there's just a lot of people out there who want to look good one night. And that includes, you know, the mother and father of bride and groom. It's a wide group. And they're having a good time. They tell their friends. I don't think everybody in that group is getting married, because we had like 82 people in there last time. So go figure.
Well,
I'm not positive.
Has anybody gotten married out of the class? I mean, have they met each other there? And you know,
well, you know, we need to follow up on that.
San Luis Coastal.
We need to follow up on that in our catalog. We currently, in our diploma class, have a father-son combination working on a diploma. And I told them, if they graduate together, I'll put their picture in the catalog. But I'm not aware of anybody in the dance class who's made it quite.
Chris, you're asking for a cohort survival on that, isn't it?
All right. Well, I think you're a good sport, and I thank you very much. I'm sure that we're all appreciative of the many offerings, many diverse offerings that the adult school provides to the people in our district. And that said, I'll move approval of item 19. Seconded by Mr. Angel. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Okay. Advance agenda. Mr. Buckman.
In light of what we heard tonight on the stimulus package and the possibility of it getting somehow scooped up at the state level, I would propose that at the next meeting we have a resolution that, with all its whereases and therefores, but basically gets down to the fact that if the stimulus money comes into the state for education, it should go to education.
Okay. All right. So, you want that at the next meeting. So we're going to sidestep our regular advance agenda building process and just go ahead and move to put that, agendize that for the next meeting?
Process allows you to do that.
Okay. We have board support for it. It appears that we do. Let's go ahead and schedule that for the next meeting.
I wanted to let the board know that after we closed the agenda for this meeting, we received in the mail another ballot from CSBA for the Delegate Assembly. There is a runoff again between Tammy Gunther and Gene Duggar. So at your next agenda on April 28th, that ballot will be presented for you, and the deadline for that is April 30th, so we need to take action that night.
Okay. That's great. If there's nothing else, we are adjourned.